This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 118 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Good evening, Max.
Hello, David. Been fighting a cold recently, so if I don't sound the way I normally do, maybe that's part of the reason. Hopefully, the dullness of the cold is superseded by some of the exciting events that we saw taking place this past week.
I don't know where to begin. This episode is going to be entirely about registration. We're recording this on a Thursday night. It was the previous Monday where U.S. Transportation Secretary Anthony Fox announced an unmanned aircraft registration requirement for all unmanned aircraft. Max and I decided it was important, if you didn't actually hear the press conference, that you should have either watched it or listened to it. So there'll be links to the video in the show notes, but our stellar producer, Mr. Flight, did something very nice for our listeners.
Yeah, that's right. What we're going to do here is play the audio from the press conference. It lasts a little under 30 minutes. So this episode is going to be longer than usual. If you have heard the press conference or seen the video and you don't really care to listen again, then go ahead and skip forward about 30 minutes and pick us up on the other side. So again, the press conference, I think, is very telling in terms of what it is the DOT and the FAA are trying to accomplish here and how they expect to go about it. So you'll hear that in just a second. On the other side from that, Dave and I will give our analysis of what happened, and then we'll relate some thoughts by some others. And then finally, we'll explain how you can submit comments to the DOT concerning this registration requirement proposal. I'm not exactly sure how to classify it at this point.
Let's just call it the NPRM Strikes Back.
It's okay.
A good name for the sequel.
All right. So with that, here is the audio from the announcement by Secretary Anthony Fox. You'll hear him speak. Also, you'll hear supporting comments given by Brian Wynn, President and CEO of AUVSI. Also, Richard Hansen, he's from the AMA, and Captain Tim Connell from ALPA. And that's followed in the press conference by some questions and answers that I think you'll find very, very interesting. So with that, here is the press conference.
Hello, everyone. It's great to be here with you, and I want to begin by acknowledging our FAA Administrator, Michael Huerta, who is here with me this afternoon for this announcement. I also want to thank the organization standing here with us, demonstrating their shared commitment to improve the safe use of unmanned aircraft in the United States. We have with us the Association for Unmanned Vehicle Systems International, the Academy of Model Aeronautics, the Airline Pilots Association International, the American Association of Airport Executives, the Helicopter Association International, Precision Hawk, and AirMap. The United States Department of Transportation is bullish about technology and transportation. The rate of change driven by technology and other sectors in our lives has now reached the transportation sector, and it requires this agency to be agile enough to adapt and integrate innovation into our national transportation system. Whether we're talking about driverless cars or unmanned aircraft, we're committed as an agency to recognizing the potential of these innovations while we establish the ground rules to ensure their safe integration into our national transportation system. We fully appreciate the potential of unmanned aircraft to transform transportation, commerce, and quality of life. In fact, unmanned aircraft are already doing some really important things, like inspecting infrastructure and crops and aiding wildlife monitoring. They're also being used by the movie industry and by entrepreneurs to promote all kinds of businesses. But we've also seen unmanned aircraft interfere, not help, with our lives. Most recently in California during wildfire operations. Some have come too close to airplanes and airports. And even at the U.S. Open tennis tournament in September, an unmanned aircraft flying in a densely populated area near LaGuardia Airport crashed inside Arthur Ashe Stadium during a match. As we continue to work on protocols and procedures for the integration of unmanned aircraft into the national airspace system, we must work ever harder to ensure a strong culture of safety, accountability, and responsibility among users. This year, pilots have reported seeing unmanned aircraft twice as frequently as they did in 2014. And the number of unmanned aircraft in our airspace continues to grow at astounding rates. So today I want to share with you some additional measures we're taking to ensure that unmanned aircraft are safely integrated into the national airspace. We're going to require operators of drones to register their aircraft just like commercial drone operators do currently. Think of it this way. It may be okay to operate an off-road vehicle without registering it if you're using it on your own property. However, if you intend to take it onto local streets or onto highways, you're expected to register it and operate it safely to protect the public. The details of this new registration system will be developed by a task force consisting of government, leaders, and a diverse group of stakeholders who will work on a tight deadline to get this work done. First, registration will reinforce the need for unmanned aircraft users, including consumers and hobbyists, to operate their drones safely. It's really hard to follow rules if you don't know what the rules are or that the rules apply to you. And so registration gives operators the opportunity to learn the airspace rules before they fly and enjoy their devices safely. Second, registration will help us enforce the rules against those who operate unsafely by allowing the FAA to identify the operators of unmanned aircraft. We can take enforcement action as necessary to protect the airspace for everyone. If unmanned aircraft operators break the rules, clearly there should be consequences. But in fact, there can be no accountability if a person breaking the rules can't be identified. Registration will now allow us to identify them. We've done a lot with education and with outreach to inform new users of the airspace, and we'll continue to do that outreach. For example, we've partnered with members of industry and the modeling community to initiate Know Before You Fly outreach campaigns, providing recreational operators with the information they need to fly safely and responsibly. Several unmanned aircraft manufacturers now voluntarily include educational materials in their packaging, and we thank them for that. The San Francisco 49ers football team even partnered with us to record a short commercial to discourage people from flying drones over their stadium. We're also working with many of the nation's major airports on a similar campaign to spread the message that flying around airports and runways is unsafe and will result in stiff penalties and fines. Additionally, the FAA has a national no drone zone campaign. The FAA is currently beta testing an app that helps unmanned aircraft operators determine whether there are any restrictions or requirements in effect where they want to fly. This step we're taking today has an added benefit as an additional educational tool. People registering their drones will be exposed to the rules and the reasons for those rules, and we believe this will help reduce some of the incidents I described earlier. But we also want to ramp up on enforcement. We'll be able to instill the accountability for safety that is generally ubiquitous among those responsible model aircraft users and users of the national airspace. And now I want to state the obvious point here. There's still a lot of work to do. This is not the whole solution. This is just a part of it. And the task force will be charged with answering a number of critical questions. But clarifying that federal law requires the registration of all aircraft, including unmanned aircraft, is essential to ensuring accountability and is an important part of our ongoing vigilance on this issue. This is a positive step forward for safety in our skies. By taking this measure, we will create a streamlined registration process for all small drone users and will continue to protect and encourage innovation in our airspace. I also want to assure you that the FAA's ongoing work to quickly and efficiently integrate unmanned aircraft in the national airspace will continue and will not be slowed down by this effort. Earlier this year, we took an important step by releasing a proposed rule. This laid out a flexible framework for allowing the routine commercial use of small unmanned aircraft. The FAA received more than 4,500 public comments on the proposal and is working to address those comments so the rule can be finalized by June of 2016. We're accommodating requests for some commercial operations under our Section 333 exemption process. And to date, I have signed off on roughly 2,000 exemptions that allow unmanned aircraft to be used for a variety of purposes. So the registration requirement that we're announcing today will not delay any of this ongoing work, especially the completion of our small UAS rule. With that, I want to conclude by thanking all of our stakeholders for their continued input to ensure the successful integration of unmanned aircraft technology and their unflagging commitment to safety. And now I want to invite one of our guests up here, Brian Nguyen of the Association of Unmanned Vehicle Systems International. Brian, welcome. There you go.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Secretary. It's a pleasure to be here today with you and with FAA Administrator Michael Huerta. On behalf of the 7,500 members of the Association for Unmanned Vehicle Systems International, we welcome the opportunity to join this task force of government and industry stakeholders. This collaborative effort to develop an efficient process for UAS registration should lead to an increased accountability across the entire aviation community. Under FAA's proposed small UAS rules released earlier this year, commercial operators would be required to register their platforms. Extending this requirement to other UAS users will promote responsibility and safety. In addition to expanded UAS registration, we hope the FAA will finalize its small UAS rules soon. Once this happens, there will be an established framework for UAS operators allowing anyone who follows the rules to fly. Safety through education is also essential for UAS operations. That's why last year AUVSI, the Academy of Model Aeronautics, and the FAA launched the Know Before You Fly campaign, which seeks to educate newcomers to UAS technology about safe and responsible use. So far, 24 associations, organizations, and businesses from both the manned and unmanned aviation communities have become supporters of Know Before You Fly. These supporters include UAS manufacturers and distributors who are putting Know Before You Fly materials in product packaging at the point of sale and online to provide consumers with the information they need to fly safely. AUVSI is pleased to be part of this initiative and to work with the other task force members on this important issue for the UAS industry and the entire aviation community. With that, it's my pleasure to bring up Rich Hansen, Director of Government and Regulatory Affairs for the Academy of Model Aeronautics.
Thank you, Brian. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to thank Secretary Fox and Mr. Huerta for the opportunity to be here this afternoon. The Academy of Model Aeronautics and its more than 180,000 members across the country recognize the importance of this issue. We stand ready to lend our nearly 80 years of experience in managing the model aircraft community and operating recreational UAS in finding a reasonable and appropriate solution to this issue. Registration of certain UAS that meet an appropriate threshold of weight, capability, and other safety factors makes sense. In fact, AMA's safety program already instructs all members to place their AMA number or their name and address either on or within their aircraft, thus ensuring operator accountability and promoting safety within the model aviation community. This is just one of the many reasons why hundreds of thousands of model aircraft have operated harmoniously within our communities for decades. Even more of these devices are virtually toys that pose little to no risk, have minimal capabilities, and have extremely short lifespan. The challenge, therefore, will be striking the right balance and setting the criteria and threshold for registration at an appropriate and effective level. This process should be streamlined, welcoming, and unobtrusive to allow this emerging industry to flourish and the community of users to continue to enjoy the use of this technology, while necessarily keeping our airspace and our communities safe. At the same time, we will also continue working on the Know Before You Fly campaign that Brian mentioned just shortly, along with the FAA and our other supporters, to provide essential educational tools to the legions of new flyers taking to the skies. We look forward to continuing the advancing of all of these efforts. Thank you very much, and I would like to introduce now Captain Tim Connell, President of the Airline Pilots Association.
Thank you, Rich, and thank you, Secretary Fox. I am very pleased to be standing here representing not just the 52,000 members of the Airline Pilots Association International, but representing all commercial airline pilots around the world. I can say with confidence that safety is our collective priority. As the operators responsible for flying passengers and cargo, we are hyper-focused on ensuring the safety of our aviation system, including the safe integration of unmanned aircraft systems into the national airspace. ALPA fully supports Secretary Fox's decision to create a task force that will recommend procedures and policies for creating a national registration database for all UAS. In testimony I gave earlier this month at the House Aviation Subcommittee, and I will reiterate later this month at the Senate, I outlined ALPA's recommended four-point action plan that included a registration component. This simple and necessary tactic will not only allow authorities to immediately identify the owner, but will also drive home the seriousness of operations of these UAS. The FAA task force is certainly a step in the right direction, but we also need timely decisions. There is an anticipation of sale of more than 1 million UASs during this year's holiday season. This is on the heels of hundreds of FAA reports of pilots and UAS encounters. With all these safety concerns in mind, the Airline Pilots Association is ready to engage in discussions with its counterparts and to assist the task force in developing the procedures necessary to ensure we maintain the highest levels of safety of our aviation system. Thank you again, Secretary Fox, for your leadership on this important issue.
And now, Administrator Huerta and I will be happy to answer questions. Yeah, Tom.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Could you give us some sense of your timeline here? There's been some discussion. You would like to see these rules in place as soon as the Christmas season, but that would kind of sideline or find a way around the regular rulemaking process. So to do that, are you declaring some sort of an emergency condition that allows you to move that rapidly? And can I also ask you quickly, will this technology have any sort of, are you proposing ultimately any kind of a geofencing capability associated with this, with the new regs?
Geofencing isn't the subject of this registration effort, but we do intend to move very quickly. And it is my hope that the task force will complete its recommendations in the middle part of November with the goal of having some rules in place by the middle part of December.
Does that mean, though, that you have to pursue an emergency route to get there, bypassing the normal regulations?
We are looking very carefully at the regulatory process, but we do feel the level of urgency here is sufficient to move as quickly as we possibly can. Yeah.
Secretary, how do you plan to enforce this, particularly with people who already own drones? What's their incentive to register them?
One of the things that this task force will look at is what sorts of provisions should be made for people who already own drones, and that's a recommendation that will be forthcoming from the task force on how to deal with that. But we would expect retroactive registration. There may be a grace period. This task force will have to come up with those solutions.
But how are you going to enforce that? Are you going to send the drone police after people?
Well, look, the reality is that the signal we're sending today is that when you enter the national airspace, it's a very serious matter. This isn't riding your ATV on your own property. This is actually going into the space where other users are also occupying that space. And it is a matter of responsibility that we will take seriously. And again, there are penalties that are associated with failure to do so. Yes?
Given the fact that in many of these incidents, you never find the drones or they're never found, they're just sighted, how do you really see this as holding people accountable or being able to make a big dent in any of these incidents that have happened?
Well, finding the drone has not been as much of a problem as finding the person who was using the drone. And the registration is designed to close that loophole. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. The first question is, what kind of information from consumers would be required at this point? What information are you envisioning having to ask an individual when they want to register? And secondly, how possible is it to actually make sure that every single drone is indeed registered? And how do you foresee that you'd be able to prevent someone from skirting the registration system?
So let's start with the first question. In terms of registration, I think the intent here is to create as user-friendly a portal as possible. And again, the task force is going to have to wrestle with some of the questions about how much information to ask from consumers, but clearly identifiable information that helps us point back to the user is going to be critical. Your next question about, I just sort of blanked on your next question, so.
Well, do you believe that it's possible to actually make sure that every single drone that's sold, whether it's online, whether it's in a brick and mortar store, that it is actually registered? How will you make sure that a bad guy, for example, yeah, with malicious intent does not skirt the registration system? Yeah.
Well, so I think we have to compare the before and after. Today, there is no requirement for individual consumers like you and me to register. And so we are now moving towards a registration requirement. I think many, if not most, users will comply because of the attention that we are giving to this issue. But as I said in the previous question, that there are penalties associated with using these devices in the national airspace without complying with the registration requirement.
Mr. Secretary, yeah, to use the term drone police, there really are no drone police. The administrator has some civil authority, but if you want to take criminal action activity, it's up to local and state authorities. There's all this talk about enforcement, but can you truly enforce somebody who is violating the national airspace?
Well, look, right now, if we have to go through a lot of steps to be able to identify who, in fact, was using a drone. This effort to register will give us the information we need to trace back to the user. That's an important piece of information to help us, and there are actual federal penalties associated with violating the requirement that we will be imposing.
But who in the federal government is going to go after those individuals?
Well, look, I think our typical process is for the Justice Department to prosecute these actions. But again, when you can't identify who, in fact, was using the drone, it makes it very difficult. That's what this registration requirement is designed to fix. And Michael, I don't know if you want to jump in here.
I think the only thing that I would add, David, is this is a partnership that we do with local law enforcement. And the important thing that we're doing today is establishing what the rules are. And the rules are, we're expecting you to be registered if you operate within the National Airspace System. With that clarification, which is an authority that we currently have, then that creates a template if you are not operating within with that proper registration, that provides a basis for us to go after you and with our other law enforcement partners. It's a partnership of the FAA, which sets the regulatory framework, working with our law enforcement partners.
Yes.
Hi. Correct me if I'm wrong. I could be wrong, but I thought Map 21 said that FAA wasn't supposed to regulate these hobbyists that are using drones. And so I'm wondering if you have the legal authority here to require this registration, since a lot of the people who are buying these drones, many of them are members of the Academy, but many are not, are just hobbyists.
So we're not requiring licensure of the operators. They're not required to get a license to operate them. In that sense, Map 21 did have, not Map 21, the last FAA reauthorization did exclude hobbyists. But when it comes to registration, this is a safety authority the FAA has, and it's one that we're exercising. Yes.
Any manufacturers of drones on this? And secondly, how often will the task force meet, and when will their recommendations be made public?
So we've actually been having lots of conversations with manufacturers of drones. As I mentioned before, some of them have actually included some of the educational information that we think is very important for consumers to know in the packaging of the devices. And so those conversations will continue. I'm hopeful that we'll have some who will actually be part of the task force. Michael, you can talk a little bit about process around the task force.
Yes, the Secretary has asked for the task force to complete its work by November 20th. And so they'll meet as often as they need to, and there is a set of questions that we want to work through relating to how we draw the line, how we simplify the process, how we make it as easy for people to do as we possibly can. And then we will take that and implement it. And obviously the goal is to get that in place as quickly as possible.
Yes.
There was a case study this past summer with an 18-year-old Connecticut student who had a drone that had a semi-automatic gun shooting on his property. So I'm wondering how the Connecticut feds could take no action because there was no FAA regulation regarding this. So I'm wondering how the task force is going to be considering gun control, gun safety when dealing with drone.
It's illegal to drop anything from an aircraft operating in the National Airspace System. But this whole range of issues of how do we ensure safe operation is what we're trying to get at. And registration is a very important point on that.
But it's technically still legal.
No. It is illegal to drop anything or shoot anything from any aircraft operating in the National Airspace System.
And I will add that this task force that we're setting up today is a registration task force. There's a wider sweep task force. The ARC is also working on these issues as well. Last question.
Up about the numbers of close calls that you mentioned. You said mm-hmm. The pilots have reported double the number of last year. Mr. Huerta, the numbers seem a little bit confusing and have been confusing for a few months. Can you set the record straight on how many incidents or reports of actual aircraft intrusions, drone intrusions. Can you give us some hard data or numbers we can work on?
Well, Tom, we are certainly seeing a significant increase in reports. You know, and clearly, this is an industry that is taking off, and there is a lot of activity taking place in the National Airspace System. And that's what concerns us. The educational component the Secretary talked about is an important part of that. The enforcement activities that we've been undergoing, that's an important part of it. But registration provides us an opportunity to tie the aircraft with the operator, which is another tool in the toolbox going forward. And ultimately what we're trying to do is also use this as an opportunity to educate new users of unmanned aircraft of how to operate in the National Airspace System. This is all part of a whole set of things that we're doing as we work to integrate this technology into our system.
Do you envision
mentioned with this registration that there's a way to detect the drone? Are you going to have to recover an errant drone in order to trace it back to the user? Is there going to be a transponder of some kind? Otherwise, I don't understand how it helps in the bulk of the reports.
Look, this is about having a national registry of folks who are owners of drones and users of drones. And as I've said before, our challenge so far has not been identifying the drone itself. It's been connecting it back to the person who is using it, and this will help us deal with that effectively. This is not about transponders or geofencing. This is about the connection.
It's just if you don't understand.
Well,
pilot reports a drone flying near JFK, and you're able to trace it back to the user path.
Well, we identify the drone. We collect the information on the drone, and the drone is cross-checked against the National Registry.
Getting the drone, or will you be able to collect that data?
These are the types of issues that this task force is going to deal with, but my bottom line point is you do have to have some access to the drone to connect it back to the user. I don't think that's going to be as big of a problem as you may think it is, because in most instances, we've actually seen the drone. We just haven't seen the person operating it.
Thank you. Secretary, Minister, I believe some of the other participants here may be
willing. Well, David, what did you think about that?
I'll be honest, folks. I literally watched it on my iPhone sitting in the lunchroom having a ham sandwich. And my initial reaction was I wasn't really sure what to make of it. It sounds good on paper, maybe, and then it sort of, you start thinking about it and going, okay, maybe this isn't going to be as easy as the perception is of the DOT to do this. Yes, we register all of our cars. Yes, we register our airplanes, but the FAA handles aircraft, but they're not handling the volumes of aircraft that we're talking about, given the fact that some of the news reports were saying up to 1 million drones will be sold this Christmas. And this is going to be in effect before that point. It's kind of daunting, I would say. What do you think, Max?
Yeah, for sure. I understand, I think, where they're coming from, which is that if people are going to fly unsafely, that you need to be able to find those people. And if the drones are registered, then that can help you find those people. Now, maybe in some cases, maybe not in others. But other than that sort of broad objective, what they're basically doing is leaving this up to the task force to work out the details. And I will say that the task force does seem to have pretty good and broad participation from a lot of different organizations. I mean, I think they've pulled the right groups in. The timeline is extremely short. I mean, to have a report or recommendations or a proposal from the task force by November 20th and to have something implemented by mid-December, just ahead of the, you know, here come the million drone purchases for the holiday season, that seems kind of tough. Another issue that some others raised too is you know, how do they have the authority to do this and not go through like the NPRM process? You know, how can you just declare that this is going to be a requirement? So that's another topic to talk about.
Which I think we sort of got an answer for today. Not to skip ahead, but. And we'll have more about this in a bit, but I think the comment portion that they put out today by the Department of Transportation is a little bit of retraction going, well, maybe we did a little overstep.
I think so.
I mean, now I tweeted jokingly that I volunteer to be register of drones for the Department of Transportation, but it's like here in the United States, for those people listening overseas, we register our cars, and believe it or not, that's done on the state level. And what my car may be determined safe in Pennsylvania might not be safe in another state because their regulations are different. It's state specific. There isn't a national registration for automobiles. and inspections and requirements are different for all states. It's a global project, but the nitty-gritty is going to come down to the details and who and what gets registered, and then you start getting into there's an overtone of Big Brother here. The word registration kind of has a negative overtone, and I don't know how they're going to overcome that.
Another thought, I think, is just the infrastructure to handle this volume. Obviously, the FAA does register aircraft, manned aircraft, and there's a process for doing that. But can that process be, you know, jacked up on almost a moment's notice to handle a much, much larger volume? Partly it's going to come down to what's the scope of this. You know, what do they want to include? How do you define what drone should be registered and what should not? I mean, it's kind of easy to think that the little toy drones, maybe nano drones that you might see in the mall or something like that flown indoors. I mean, no need. We're not going to be registering those. I'm you know, virtually certain of that. A 40, 50-pound commercial-grade UAV used in that context, okay, that's a different matter. But what about all that stuff in the middle? Are we going to register each and every 3D robotics drone, every DJI Phantom? You know, what's the scope? We don't know yet.
And the other thing to think about is if you determine the scope, there has to be some way to communicate to the people who need to register these vehicles. You know, you have to determine the scope, what's getting registered. You have to determine how it's going to get registered. And then you've got to communicate who's going to be doing the register, who's going to be responsible to register the aircraft. Now, this is in response to, I mean, we could put it directly, push it probably directly to California and the incidents with the UAVs and the firefighting. All roads seem to lead back to that. So you're talking about a DJI Phantom classed aircraft that they're making thousands. They're selling thousands of them a day. And that's, I believe, Max, the target for this registration is that area where we seem to be having the issue with rogue flyers.
Right, yes. That's where it points to. We see an article. This was published by Jonathan Ruprecht, who was our guest back in episode 97. Of course, you'll remember Jonathan is from Ruprecht Law. He's a commercial pilot, a flight instructor, and he wrote a piece titled "The Problems with Mandatory Drone Registration." And he lists a number of items, I think about 11. And for some of them, he's got some solutions. For others, they're kind of open. And they include such things as, well, so the practical aspect of there are not enough N numbers handle huge increases in you know, the number of craft that need those numbers. Now, there's things you can do. They can be extended. You could use more letters rather than strict numbers and that sort of thing. But that's something that he raises that you need to think about.
And right now, that's a major requirement for a 333 is you must have a November number.
Right.
Okay. So we have all of our people who are applying for their 333s going through the process of getting a November number, and they are treating them like aircraft. You can get a personalized November number. I know our friend Parker just applied for his 333 and his November number, and he personalized it. So that takes that number out of the system. And it's not like a license plate where, you know, here in the state of Pennsylvania, you get, if you don't have a personal license plate, you get whatever numbers at the top, the next one on the top of the list. So November numbers are governed by international regulations, not just federal regulations. So
it's complicated. And what happens if all of a sudden 300,000 more people need an N number? You know, can the system handle that? That's difficult. Jonathan also has some other issues he raises. For example, what do you do if you decide that you're not going to fly anymore? You're going to sell your quadcopter or just, you know, toss it in the attic or something. You're not going to use it anymore. what happens? As it transfers from person to person, do you need to maintain a paper trail? Who does that, maintaining the seller, some centralized database? How does that all work? So that's another issue that he has questions about.
Problem three, what in the world does the FAA and Department of Transportation even regulate? We've had a discussion multiple times that the FAA doesn't really have any enforcement things. So if you're flying an unregistered drone, who's responsible to arrest, to take out, report that unregistered drone? The FAA doesn't have, they don't have the manpower currently for the people applying for the 333s and such. We're now broadening the whole scope to, I don't know how big, and granted, the Department of Transportation, U.S. Department, registers trucks that go from state to state. But I mean, I don't see many states looking forward to adding to their bureaucracy of having to register drones.
And what is a drone? I mean, a drone is a collection of parts. And they break, they get upgraded. What's the drone? What's the part that keeps it the same drone? Raises an example for guns, for firearms. It's the lower receiver. You can change the barrel, you can change the stock, you can change the sights. It's still the same serial number, but that's associated with the receiver on the gun. But what is it on the drone? Not that this is something that couldn't be figured out, but it just sort of illustrates the complication involved in doing this. Jonathan also says things how are you going to identify the drone, the aircraft, after an accident or some incident? You may have just little pieces left. How much value are you going to get from that? Also, as do some others, and this was, as you heard, one of the questions in the press conference, is just exactly how is this going to, make the airspace safer? How effective is this going to be? Jonathan also talks about who's going to pay for this, right? There's a whole administrative function here.
That's my future paycheck to worry about, that when my paycheck comes for being register of drones.
No, register. Yeah. And that's kind of the point, is there's an infrastructure that seemingly would need to be built. I don't know if what's out there now can handle this, or if that can be scaled up, or if you have to create something new. So lots of questions. We also have a response from the U.S. Association of Unmanned Aerial Videographers, UAVUS. They call themselves the largest membership association of commercial unmanned aerial vehicles operators in the United States. And they say they support the development of a streamlined registration process for small UAVs that meet an appropriate threshold for size, weight, and capabilities. But they also say that this registration proposal is, quote, overly ambitious and could add to the confusion created by the absence of the FAA's final rulemaking for the commercial use of small UAVs. So that's from the UAVUS.
But it was sort of surprising to see the head of AUVSI stand up there and present in the press conference. Likewise, ALPA, the Airline Pilots Association, the DOT has reached out to a lot of stakeholders in this, which, in all fairness, I'll give them credit for. They are trying to, cast a wide net to get the biggest possible bang for their buck in the shortest amount of time. I know that we've got some interesting, we're working with Precision Hawk, who's been on our team. They're going to be on the committee. So hopefully we'll have them on the show so they can talk about little inside baseball of what's going on.
It's an awful lot of work to be done in a really, really short period of time.
And it came out of the blue. Okay, folks, I'll be honest. I spent the whole weekend excited about the Star Wars trailer on Monday night. This was not my first priority. But it did seem sort of started percolating last Friday. Of course, we record on a Thursday night and the news breaks on Friday. It was sort of like, really? You know, and then suddenly there's an announcement on Monday with a press conference. It may have been brewing for a while internally, and it's interesting that it didn't come from the FAA. It came from the Department of Transportation, who oversees the FAA. And I'm wondering if that would be because if it had come from the FAA, the blowback would be, I think, substantially more than what we've been getting.
Yeah. Well, and it brings a little bit more horsepower to the party, I think. But another thing happened just today that I guess was, again, unexpected. And we got this from the Hogan Lovells law firm, DOT accepting public comments on UAS registration requirements.
Like I said, the NPRM strikes back. There's 50, as we started the show, there were 56 comments already on it. I could not find a formal announcement from the Department of Transportation saying it was out there or the FAA. We got this through Hogan Lovells or Lovells and from Lisa. So it was sent to us in an email blast with the information and the link. And it sort of, I guess somebody in legal at Department of Transportation said, you need to do this. And maybe they're hoping not to have, how many did we have for the NPRM that they're still digesting?
Yeah, over 4,000, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, so...
Well, they don't have time to go through that many.
No,
right. But what they did do is they published this in the Federal Register, which starts they being the DOT, which starts the clock rolling. And we'll put a link to this in the show notes. Again, this is at regulations.gov, same as the NPRM. Similar kind of a looking webpage for this. Gives you the ability to... submit comments, and they provide some guidance. They say, to facilitate the task force's work, we are requesting, they say, information and data from the public in the following areas. Now, we'll go through some of these in general, but to me, David, these are the areas that were asked in the Q&A at the press conference. They're the questions that we've been asking and that many others have been asking as well. So the areas that they're looking for feedback, and this is something that you all listening can contribute. For example, what methods are available for identifying individual products? Does every UAS sold have an individual serial number? Is there another method for identifying individual products sold without serial numbers or those built from kits?
Yeah, I mean, this is an industry where people are building them from scratch and using parts. They're not just taking off-the-shelf parts, you know, propellers from this company, frames from this company, and, okay, is the complete package the registration, or is it the frame, you know?
Right.
The second one, at what point should registration occur? Point of sale, prior to operation, how should transfers of ownership be addressed in registration? Something that comes out of that I was thinking about, is there going to be a minimum age for registration? or is my 10-year-old nephew going to have to register his quadcopter that we're going to give him? Just that alone is worth a comment about, you know, okay.
Sure.
What's the minimum age? You know, is there a maximum age? Can my 90-year-old father go off and register his quadcopter? The next one would be, if registration occurs at point of sale, who should be responsible for submission of data? And this goes back to our conversation with who was the head of the hobby association a couple episodes back, where we were talking about whose responsibility is to instruct the person who's walking out the door with the UAV. Does the hobby shop or mail order company have any responsibility after they sell the drone if somebody goes off and flies it off to somewhere else, you know, or into a stadium somewhere?
Yep.
Do they have any financial responsibility? We're going to give them the registering power, what's the fine going to be that they don't register somebody's drone because it's a Christmas rush and they forgot and they had 100 people at the register, and that person goes off and flies it into a stadium, you know, when somebody gets hurt? Who's responsible for that?
I think that, you know, in the press conference, when these sort of associated questions were asked, FAA and the DOT tried to bring it back to, hey, this is just registration. You know, this is just registration. Of course, then the questions come, well, what about enforcement? Because that's the objective, and that's where some of the answers weren't the strongest. But back to some of the questions that they're looking for answers to or thoughts in the comments. Another one is, should certain UAS be excluded from registration based on performance, capabilities, or other characteristics that could be associated with safety risk, such as weight, speed, altitude operating limitations, duration of flight? Another one, how should a registration process be designed to minimize burdens and best protect innovation and encourage growth in the UAS industry? Okay, good question. Another one, should the registration process be electronic or web-based? Are there existing tools that could support an electronic registration process? You know, many of these are the obvious questions that if you were part of the task force and had to come up with a registration process, these are all the questions that, you know, should be looked at and addressed.
In the brainstorming session, they're going to get written up on the whiteboard, you know.
Yep.
There is the dark one out there. The next two on the list are everybody's concern. Which is privacy. Is my social security number going to be attached to my drone? What are they going to require for the bare minimum to register the drone? And then, of course, there's the cynical, what kind of revenue are we going to get by having everybody register these drones? Right.
And what payment service are we going to use?
Well, exactly. It's how much is this going to cost me to register my quadcopter? And I don't know what it is in Connecticut for you, but it's close to like $40 for me to register my car for the year.
That's a question that needs to be addressed. The final one in the list here is kind of a catch-all maybe for every other idea. And they say, are there additional means beyond aircraft registration to encourage accountability and responsible use of UAS? So all of the questions preceding, again, are kind of directed towards giving input to a group that's got to figure out how to do this registration. But the last one is, okay, if that's, they're not using these words, but if that's not a good idea, or if that's not going to work, or if that's not feasible, what other ideas do you guys have? And, you know, I got to give them credit for, you know, taking the opportunity to ask that question, although maybe one could argue that that's a kind of a question that you should ask before launching into this registration initiative. But in any event, the link to that will be in the show notes. You know, as with the NPRM, strongly encourage people to contribute thoughts. I would just add this, you know, it's easy to be, or to sound negative and to say, well, what about this? What about this? What about this? What, you know, just list all the problems. I think that it's in our collective best interests if we kind of be careful about overdoing that and instead, you know, think about it in terms of, okay, what are the solutions? Not just what are the problems, but what are the solutions? So that's just my plea for how I'd like to see others submit their feedback to the federal government on this topic.
We're in a position to be part of the solution, not just the problem.
Yeah.
And we're all aware that we don't, as an industry, want rogue pilots, you know, and it goes back to, there's two different types of rogue pilots. There's the ones that who don't know better, and Christmas is coming, and there's going to be a lot of those. And then there are the people who are genuinely bad guys or bad operators. The bad operators, though, aren't going to register their drones. So, or if they do, they're not going to care. But if this is going to happen and this is going to come, we need to, as an industry, put our best face forward and make it as positive as possible so that we all benefit from it and not have another burden thrown on us to prevent bad people doing bad things. I mean, those people are hurting us as an industry. We need to stop that, but we need to also encourage the FAA to get some enforcement. And it really wasn't very good news that the Secretary Fox made the comment that it was going to be, I think, June of next year before the FAA comes out with their proposals, which is...
Yeah, the next step of the NPRM process that was supposed to occur this year. But yeah, it's he made a commitment. He put that target date out there. So that's the current estimate, I guess, of when we're going to see those regulations. And that, you know, that's a long ways off. You know, they have a lot to do, which makes it even more surprising to me that they can accomplish all of this with the registration process in really just a few short weeks. But
we'll, and if they do that, then everyone is going to say, what the hell's the problem with doing, you know?
If you can do it here, why not there? All right.
Let's do this. We're recording this. Our listeners can be our witnesses. Do you think it'll get done by Christmas? My money is it won't happen. The need to have it done before the Christmas holiday and the Christmas shopping season does not override the necessity or the requirements underneath. So
yeah, let's do it right. And if it takes longer, okay, rather than do it fast, but it's sloppy.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's why you're the head honcho and I'm just a lonely historian.
All right, David, we're starting to run a little bit
way long.
Yeah. So do we want to mention just real quick a couple of items?
We got some feedback this week. One was from our former guest and friend of the show, Jamie, who sent us a political article, which is... when I was drone warrior for 11 years, I regret nothing, about someone who recently retired from United States Air Force and his career operating UASs. I recommend that. And then we got some feedback. The first one was from Peter. It's a video of the week, we can say. Stanford students create an app for UAV flight planning and camera control. There's an app for that, but it does show that they're thinking ahead and planning for flight plans is where it's going to be for our people on the 333s. And the last one was sent directly to you, Max, so go ahead.
Oh, this came from Tim in the UK. This is drone tested for an hour in UK civil airspace. This is about a drone, a large drone. It was flown in airspace, shared by a passenger jet. This was a trial run by some of the air traffic controllers at NATS. So we'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. Thanks to Tim in the UK for sending that along.
I guess with that, we'll wrap this up. But again, we'd like to say, go leave your comments. It's really important, but keep them positive, business-like. Don't let the DOT think that we're a bunch of raving lunatics. Let's just keep to the facts. So on that note, I guess we should run down where you can find the show notes, Max.
This has been episode 118 of the UAV Digest. So as always, you can find that at the UAVDigest.com. If you'd like to go straight to the show notes, you can use the UAVDigest.com/118. And of course, we're on all the usual social media places, aren't we, David?
You can find us on Twitter at UAV Digest. And if you want to get on there, we'll be running regular news, keeping up on the news stories on this. Our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/UAV Digest. And if you'd like to help the show, let us know what you think about this proposal. You could send it to us at feedback@theuavdigest.com. Of course, if you want other people to find us, you can leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher. If you'd like to wear some swag or show your support for the show, that we have a Cafe Press store. And of course, if you want to leave some money in the tip jar, we have a Patreon account, and that would be patreon.com/theuavdigest. And we love all of our supporters, and we appreciate their putting their hard-earned cash so that we can bring you stuff like this. And thank you to our patrons, because they supported us for doing that show, and our sponsors for doing the show in New York. And that got us to introduce us to Lisa, who got us on the bleeding edge of this article today. So your support does matter to us as sponsors and as patrons. So with that, I guess I'll say this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Now go leave your comments on the new NPRM. And thanks for listening.